Several states across the country are considering or enacting changes to their juvenile justice systems. Some laws in place up till now that involve trying and locking up children as if they were adults are getting a second look now. Just yesterday, the Oregon State Senate passed a juvenile justice reform bill that pulled together concepts that had been introduced in a package of several separate bills. Senate Bill 1008 now goes to the House for consideration. Let's get into the contents and concepts of the bill with an organization that supports the changes. That would be the Oregon chapter of ACLU. We have with us David Rogers, the executive director. Hello, David. Or not. Kimberly McCullough is the policy director at ACLU Oregon. Are you with us, Kimberly?
I sure am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. David Rogers,
wonderful.
I wonder if you're... Pardon me? There he is.
Can you hear me?
Yes, there we go.
Excellent. Hey, okay, good morning.
Good to have you both here. Could you, one of you, give us an overview of juvenile justice in Oregon and why it has become a target for housekeeping?
I can take a crack at the history. So, you know, really, we can trace this back to 1994. And that was a year where California passed its three strikes law. That was a year where Bill Clinton signed the crime bill, which he later apologized for. And here in Oregon, voters passed Measure 11, which was a set of mandatory minimum sentences that had the dubious distinction of treating youth 15, 16, and 17-year-olds automatically as adults as soon as they were charged by a prosecutor or a district attorney with a Measure 11 offense. And it's worth noting that those laws passed at the height of the country's tough-on-crime era that was really based on a lot of misinformation, myths, that at this point we've learned that it's really the wrong way to handle young people. And so people have been working on reforms for quite a long time to change the way that we're handling young people and holding them accountable within the justice system. And because we know so much more now since that law was passed in 1994, and the set of reforms that Kimberly can speak to really addresses long overdue changes to Measure 11.
So Kimberly McCullough, you're generally stationed in Salem this time of year, I understand, helping work with the legislature on what the changes might be. What are the sources of information that make us think anew about juvenile justice?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And actually, I had the great privilege of participating in a stakeholder group that was pulled together by some senators here in the Oregon legislature. We had over 35 participants from basically every aspect of the juvenile justice system and then a number of different advocacy organizations. And we met for over a year. And one of the big things that really influenced us was new developments in brain science and our understanding about how young minds change and grow. And, you know, my caveat here is I am not a doctor. So,
all right.
So
fair enough.
It's not, you know, my understanding of it. But basically what happens with young people is, in particular in their teenage years, they're sort of the emotion center, and it's your kind of your amygdala fight or flight response gets overactive. It's extremely active, while at the same time your sort of more thinking brain, the logical brain, the part of your brain that thinks about things long term, thinks about consequences, is not as well developed, and so that part of the brain basically gets hijacked by the emotional brain and the reactive brain, and so young people essentially have difficulty making good decisions, particularly in the heat of the moment. We also know that they're particularly susceptible to peer pressure, and that peer pressure actually operates differently than we used to think that it did. Peer pressure in some ways is kids thinking, this is what other kids want me to do, even if the other kids don't want them to do those things. And so they'll act out often to try to get approval from their peers, even when their peers are not expecting or wanting them to do that. And then what happens as we age is our prefrontal cortex gets very developed, and we learn, you know, to regulate our emotions, and we learn long-term thinking. And essentially a person, you know, when they become 25, 26, 27 years old, can be a very, very different person than they were when they were 15. I think if any of us actually think about ourselves when we were 15, that actually makes a lot of sense. But essentially what we've realized is that young people have just this enormous capacity to learn, to grow, to take responsibility for their actions and to rehabilitate, and then to actually be able to become people that can re-enter society and become healthy, productive members of our communities. So that brain science, I think, is a big part of it. And also our Supreme Court has recognized this and has actually, there's been a lot of changes in the way that the Supreme Court says states have to deal with young people. So cutting back on states' abilities to, for example, sentence young people to life in prison. So there's just been an evolution, I think, in the thinking about what works.
We're talking about juvenile justice reform in Oregon. A bill passed the Oregon State Senate yesterday is on its way to the State House. It contains the contents of what had been four or five different bills. We'll get to the details in just a moment with Kimberly McCulloch from ACLU Oregon and David Rogers, the executive director. Kimberly's the policy director. This is a conversation you're welcome to join. Your thoughts on juvenile justice and the appropriate way to carry it out, if we're doing it now and you're okay with that, if we can do it differently, should do it differently, let's hear your thoughts on that as well. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. David, if you would respond to the people, though, who will say, well, wait a minute, these people did these things. I mean, even if they weren't in their right minds because they were still living in their teen brains, they did a crime. They should do the time. What's the response from ACLU to that?
Well, I mean, I think that most people can agree that holding people accountable when they've harmed someone is a value that's incredibly important. And so, you know, we want to make sure that young people are held accountable, but we also want to make sure that they're held accountable in the right way, and that we're lifting up good public safety outcomes as one of the things that is a strong goal for our system, right? And that ultimately, it comes down to we want a system that's set up so that we're not just holding young people accountable, but we're doing it in a way that's going to prevent them from harming someone in the future, and that we're putting their lives back on track. And so, what we know from research from around the country, right, is that when we keep young people in the youth justice system, they are much less likely to recidivate. They're much less likely to engage in future criminal behavior. And so these reforms are actually about setting us up for the best public safety outcomes, where we're not only helping young people put their lives back on track, but we're reducing future crime. And, you know, that's the best situation. As long as we're holding young people in the adult system and transferring them to adult prison, we are not actually going to see good public safety outcomes.
Kimberly McCulloch, if you can get a little closer to your phone, that would be appreciated. You sound a little echoey there. But let me get into some of the specifics of what had been several separate bills. Is it four or five that got rolled into Senate Bill 1008?
So can you hear me a little better this
time? Perfectly, yes. Thank you.
Oh, good. So there were five bills, and one of them truly was just a little bit of a technical fix, and so we don't focus on that one quite as much. But basically the five bills, the first one is the bill that really, I think, is the heart and soul of the reform, which is making it so that the presumption is that young people are kept in the juvenile justice system. And the only way that they get transferred to the adult system is after a judge makes the determination that that is what is best, both for the, you know, for the rehabilitation of the youth, for the public safety outcomes. And that judge is going to look at a variety of factors. They're going to look at the severity of the crime. They're going to look at essentially how mature or adult-like the decision was to engage in the behavior. They're going to look at their chances of rehabilitation, how long they think that's going to take. And so basically a prosecutor would be able to make the argument to the judge that this particular youth, the crime was so serious and their behavior was so, you know, so adult-like that they need to be transferred into the adult system. And so that's going to be one major change.
All right, the juvenile court, then the life without getting rid of life without parole was also a major component, wasn't it?
That's exactly right. So ending juvenile life without parole was one of the bills as well. And so, you know, Oregon, many, many states around the country are now getting rid of their laws that allow life without parole. And that is in large part in response to the Supreme Court really narrowing the circumstances when that can happen and sort of where we see the Supreme Court going with that. But essentially, what the bill would do is it would say any youth that is sentenced to life or that is sentenced to so many sentences stacked up that it essentially is a life sentence, they call that a de facto life sentence, that for any of those youth where their sentences are very long, that they would get access to a parole hearing at 15 years. And that parole hearing is not a guaranteed, you know, get out of jail card, as you may say. It's actually a very difficult and rigorous process to make your way through. You have to prove that not just by people's observations, but by your acts and your deeds, that you have really shown that you have fully taken responsibility, that you have grown into really essentially a new person, that you have fully rehabilitated, and that you are safe to return to society. So, as we know with the parole process, a lot of people don't get through the first time, the second time, the third time. But basically, what this would do is it would create that opportunity for those youth who are able to really shine and show that they have grown.
Now, apparently, there's also a provision in the bill. Again, this is Senate Bill 1008, Juvenile Justice Reform in the Oregon Senate, passed yesterday. If people do get tried in adult court or convicted in adult court, they now will have access, if this bill gets through its final approval, get a second look at some point?
Yeah, that's correct. There's two potential release hearings. One is the second look hearing that you just mentioned, and basically that's a hearing halfway through their sentence, where the judge basically gets to look at, again, you know, how well are they doing? Have they rehabilitated? Have they taken responsibility? Are they safe to return to society? So they get an opportunity for release halfway through their sentence. And then the other opportunity is for youth who are charged and convicted as an adult. And some folks don't understand, in our system, Oregon Youth Authority actually has jurisdiction over young people until they're 25 years old, and they are able to hold them in Oregon Youth Authority facilities, so in the youth facilities, until they're 25, and at that point they get transferred to Department of Corrections and adult facilities. So for those youth that are going to be transferred at 25 years old, if they have less than 2 years left on their sentence, what they'll do is they'll do a hearing before they get transferred to determine if they would have a better outcome if they were to serve the rest of their sentence under community supervision instead of in Department of Corrections. And that's really aimed at essentially preventing the sort of undoing of all of the good work that happens at Oregon Youth Authority. So they learn all sorts of great sort of pro-social, positive behaviors, how to engage with other human beings in a healthy way. And then if they go to Department of Corrections, which is an adult correctional facility, there is a lot of danger that good work gets undone because they go into survival mode. Adult correctional facilities are very, very different than the youth facilities.
So under this, then, I mean, if they're getting a second look, is there a chance that they could spend the final 2 years? Could they spend their time in OYA up until age 27?
No, so, you know, that is actually prevented by federal law. And so we in the state of Oregon actually are somewhat unique in the fact that that young people can stay in Oregon youth facilities until 25, but that's the limit. And we actually have a waiver from the federal government that allows us to do that. But we can't extend that time. So if they did get released before going to Department of Corrections and they had time left to serve, it would be community-based supervision. So they would be in the community, but they would still have a probation officer and they would still potentially have, you know, different programs and things that they have to participate in.
What kinds of services do they get in OYA, Kimberly, that they don't get in Department of Corrections?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, The different types of services at OYA and DOC, you know, I mean, I think part of it is what they're tailored to. So they're tailored to young folks. You know, I don't want to say that DOC doesn't have programs because they do, but it's very difficult to get in those programs. There's really like very severely limited numbers of people who can actually get into the various programs. So they have work programs, they have, you know, therapy, they have drug treatment, they have all sorts of things. But they're really limited programs. And in Oregon Youth Authority, it's a smaller population, there's less facilities, and we really have, the state has prioritized spending more money on all sorts of different types of programs to help them learn and grow. And they can get, you know, education, they can get their college degree. There's a lot of folks that go into the youth facilities and volunteer to help them get the skills that they need. So there's a whole range of services that they get at Oregon Youth Authority.
Juvenile justice reform in Oregon, the topic on the table. Senate Bill 1008 passed yesterday in the Senate on its way to the House. Now we're talking to Kimberly McCullough, the policy director for ACLU of Oregon. David Rogers is the executive director. You're welcome to join the conversation by phone, 800-838-3760, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's an email from Richard Notown Given, who says the two ACLU lawyers have explanations of why teenagers may have committed serious crimes, need to explain why going easy on violent teenagers benefits society. Giving them prison time that fits the crime is appropriate. Who cares why they committed the violence? They're saying boilerplate ACLU speaking points, but since they don't have skin in the game, they have not been victims of violent teenager crime, or they don't know anyone they care about who have been the victim, says Richard Notown Given. David Rogers, would you respond, please?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I'll just say that the person who sent that email is making a lot of false assumptions. I'm a survivor of violent crime. I'm also have actually worked for well over a decade with survivors of crime around actually good public safety policy. And I think that one of the things that you'll hear from crime victims is that one of the things that they want the most is to ensure that what happened to them, what happened to us, actually doesn't happen to other people. And so what that means is the policy approaches around criminal justice and public safety have to be designed to reduce future crime. And what we've learned, right, that these reforms are focused on addressing youth accountability that have the best opportunities to reduce future crime. There was a study by the Center for Disease Control, CDC, that found that youth who are prosecuted in the adult system are 34% more likely to commit additional crimes. So if we're concerned about reducing future crime, we actually need to make these changes. We need to be able to hold young people accountable in different ways.
So, Kimberly McCullough, one of the observations I noticed that the ACLU makes about youth incarceration is that in the Oregon Youth Authority, 88% of males and 75% of females have at least one diagnosed mental health disorder. Is there anything in this reform package in Senate Bill 1008 that addresses that?
Well, I think one of the things that's really crucial here is that we clearly need to be spending more money on treatment and prevention to actually stop these things from happening in the first place. So we need to be addressing how are we helping youth with mental health issues? How are we helping youth who are in homes with parents that have mental health and addiction issues? And what we know is that the money that we are spending on mass incarceration and on the focus being on this sort of punitive criminal justice approach is that we're actually diverting our resources away from the things that will really truly help prevent crime and prevent this kind of, you know, these kinds of activities, prevent people from getting harmed. And so we really support actually reforming the system so that we're putting our money and our resources towards treatment, rehabilitation, and prevention instead of just sort of focusing on incarceration, which actually has a worse result that doesn't result in a safer society.
One of the things about Senate Bill 1008 that is most interesting is it passed by what would appear a pretty handy margin at 20-10, but it's being described by observers and journalists as a squeaker. I mean, this had to pass by a 2/3 majority and did, obviously. So why did that? And it had this special requirement upon it, Kimberly.
Yeah, so at the same time that ballot measure 11, which created the system that we have now, was passed, there was another ballot measure 10. And what that ballot measure said was that if the legislature wants to reduce a criminal sentence that has been imposed through the ballot measure process, that they have to get a two-thirds majority in order to reduce that vote, in order to reduce that sentence. And so I think the idea of the thinking back then was, well, we don't want this to be easy to undo, and so we want to make sure that we wait until there is sort of a broad consensus before the laws get changed. And I think that what we're seeing now and what's reflected in those 20 votes is a broad consensus. And that's backed up by polling that was done recently that showed that 88% of Oregonians want the focus of our youth justice system to be on prevention and rehabilitation instead of incarceration. And we actually, that polling looked specifically at the proposals in Senate Bill 1008, and it is overwhelmingly supported by the people of Oregon. And that's across party lines. That's Democrats and Republicans, because I think that people understand that we need to design a system that actually has the best outcomes for our society.
And the bill got 17 Democrats and 3 Republicans voting for it in the Senate. So again, it passed there 20-10. Now on to the House. Prospects there, Kimberly? We have less than a minute.
We're very hopeful. We're very hopeful, and we're working hard. We have a huge coalition of a lot of folks, and we're gonna do the work to try to get this done.
All right, we will see where things go in the House. We are talking about juvenile justice reform as contained in Senate Bill 1008, passing the Senate just yesterday in Oregon, 20-10. Kimberly McCullough is policy director for the ACLU of Oregon. David Rogers, the executive director. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you both.